Your support is important to Living on Earth. Donate today by pressing the donate link on the left of this page. Every bit helps. And thanks.
100 years ago, explorer Robert Peary sent a telegram from the Arctic Circle that read, "Stars and Stripes nailed to the North Pole." That's how the world learned of Peary's now famous achievement, first to reach the North Pole in April 1909. But turns out Peary's version of the story is, well, just the tip of the iceberg. Harvard professor and explorer Dr. Alan Counter has devoted decades to filling in the missing chapters. And what Counter's uncovered is a far more complex picture. For starters, Counter says Peary's success largely depended on an African-American man named Matthew Henson, a crucial member of the polar expedition.
Reaching the North Pole at that time was tantamount to reaching the moon in our lifetimes. No one knew what to expect at the top of the Earth, but Peary was a determined man, and he wanted to be the first human being to stand at the top of the Earth. Later, these things came out. But Henson was a man, an African-American, who at that time was essentially disenfranchised, like most African-Americans. And when Peary tried to give an explanation of why he hired Henson, he often said that this was a very intelligent Negro man. He was of greater intelligence than most I'd met, etc. And I found in him the abilities that enabled him to assist me to get to the pole. Now, Henson, with equal pride, said, on the other hand, "I met this man, Peary, a white man, who had the traits and characteristics that made me desire to give him my services." So there was pride on both sides.
Did Henson get proper credit or recognition for his contributions?
Well, you ask an interesting and almost, I'm sure, rhetorical question. It's obvious that none of the people of color, the Inuit people who helped get both of them there, nor Henson, received any credit. And in fact, one general, a General Greeley, said, well, he wasn't sure Peary made it to the North Pole because all he had for proof was an ignorant Negro and some ignorant Inuit people.
And they couldn't be trusted, right?
Exactly. They were called non-credible witnesses. At the same time, there was a congressman, I don't recall his name right away, who wanted to recommend medals for the other men, but he stopped short of doing that because he was afraid he would have to recommend Henson for a medal. And he, quote, "did not want to introduce the name of a Negro on the House floor." I wonder how he would feel now to see that not only the House floor, but the White House has a person of color. So these are the kinds of things that are documented that they faced. Also, the National Geographic gave all sorts of credits and awards and accolades to Peary and totally ignored Henson.
Wow. It's just amazing the way that race colored, pardon the pun, the whole enterprise.
Yes. Yes. It played a role in every step along the way. And according to the Inuit people, Henson fell asleep on the last part of the dash, and Peary tried to wake them up and get them to go ahead without Henson. And they wouldn't do it because they were close to Henson. Henson spoke the language like a native, and he persuaded them to go and help them. And so when they made the final dash, Henson took off and was ahead of Peary. And apparently there was an argument. In the 1910 Boston Herald, there's an interview with Henson where he said, "Mr. Peary didn't speak to me all the way back to the ship." When Peary finally arrived, he said, I thought I told you to halt. I gave you an order to halt short of the pole." And Henson said, "Well, I just dashed forward, and everything beyond us now is south, so we're both here," something to that effect. But I'll bet you, Henson probably said to him, "Now, when you get back to America, you'll be the all-powerful white leader, and you'll get all the credit. But I want you to know that on this day, a colored man from Washington, D.C. was the first human being to stand at the pole with these four Inuit men."
One of the missing chapters, if you will, here has to do with Henson. But there's another, and that has to do with the fact that they left behind more than just a flag while they were up there, didn't they?
Well, that's one way to look at it. Some periods of time during their exploration, they were isolated in Greenland and northern Canada for up to 4 years at a time. And they took on virtual Inuit wives. I mean, in Peary's case, he was married, but he had an Inuit wife there as well. And it turns out that Peary fathered two children with her. And Matthew Henson, who was not married at the time, Peary's assistant, had a wife in Alakasina, and she bore him a child, and that child's name was Anauka. I was exploring the area in 1986, I believe, when I was invited to a village called Morisak. And when I got to this village, which is north of our air base in Thule there, I was introduced to Anauka by the indigenous people. And he rubbed my face and thought I was a relative and said to me something to the effect that, Maripaluk, you've come to find me. And what he was saying is that you're a relative of Matthew the Kind One and you've come to find me. And I had to tell him that unfortunately I was not a relative, but I wanted, like, who are you? And that's when he told me that he was the son of Matthew Hinson. And he said, I want you to meet my cousin. And my response was, there are more of you? And he said, yes. And he took me north and sort of guided me. And I traveled about 100 kilometers north and found a man who ran out to me to look at my face. And he too said, essentially in Inuit, welcome, Maripaluk. And it was the son of Admiral Peary.
Well, you clearly became very close to these folks, and you made a pretty big promise for a special event to mark this anniversary this year. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, when you make promises, you have to be careful. It's something I've learned with my children. When you say you're going to do something, people expect you to do it. And we started talking with the older sons, whom I really came to adore, and they were talking about the North Pole and how they would like to go and so forth. But they said, you know, we're old and we're going to die soon, and we know that. They were both 80 at the time. And they said, maybe our children will go. And I said, I'll give you my word that when the anniversary of the North Pole discovery comes around in 2009, I'm going to go there and take children from both sides of the family, the Inuit Peary family, Inuit Hinson family.
Go there, you mean to the North Pole?
To the North Pole. I'm going to go there. I mean, I had no idea how I should do this. So, you know, you make these promises, and that's 20 years ahead, you know. And all of a sudden, the time comes around, and people are saying, basically, what are you going to do? And so I made every effort. I contacted the Air Force, and we discussed the prospect. They were very helpful. It was decided that we would take a flight on a C-130. But unfortunately, just as I was so enthusiastic about this, it notified the family. We had asked them to select the different family members who would go with us. We were going to lay a wreath. We're going to take a time capsule and take a commemorative capsule there and bring it back for young people to learn more about the Arctic. Just as we decided to do that, we got the bad news that, well, we've looked at this, and it's unlikely we can do this exercise because the ice pack or the ice is so weak we could not tolerate landing there. And I had heard, too, that there had been difficulty with other planes. In fact, I don't have concrete evidence, but I've been told that two instances where planes sank after landing there. So we couldn't put anybody's lives at risk. So there I was without a flight. I was able to get the U.S. Navy submarine with the help of Admiral Melvin G. Williams, Jr. We were able to get the commemorative case containing memorabilia from Hinson and Peary to the North Pole, and we were very proud of that.
Dr. Counter, why have you done all this? Why does this mean so much to you?
When you start an initiative like this, you cannot predict where it's going to go or what's going to happen. Who would have thought that you'd meet a man who just becomes a part of your life, an Afro-Inuit or an Afro-Eskimo who tells you what it means for him to just meet a family member? And it touched my heart very deeply. And they've become more like family now, not just friends or acquaintances. When they were here in 1987, one of the sons had a pregnant wife. And he said, I'm looking forward to my child. And we don't know what to name him. My mother said to Vitus, the grandson of Matthew Hinson, she said, name him Alan. And just dropped it like that. So when I got back to Greenland, I must tell you, I was absolutely just pleasantly shocked to see a 6'5" Inuit young man, 20 years old, just turning 21 now, named Alan. Alan Hinson. I mean, it just touched my heart deeply. So not only am I a member of the family, but there's a young man there named for me. And I was just so touched. And so, again, that's why I do it. It's a human thing. I had no motives other than that from the outset to now.
This is such an amazing story. And it's on top of what was already an amazing story. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Alan Counter is a neurology professor at Harvard University and author of North Pole Legacy, Black, White, and Eskimo. Counter also helped Matthew Hinson get some long overdue recognition. He requested that Hinson's remains be moved to a place of honor, and Hinson now lies in Arlington National Cemetery, just next to Robert Peary.